I'm Nell Frizzell, and this is The Panic Years. When I was 28, everyone around me seemed to be getting married, getting promotions, buying houses, and having babies. I was single, redundant, and living with my mum. At the time, I thought it was a private crisis. Now I understand it was just my panic years, and that is what this podcast is all about. I'm in a deer enclosure in the rain. Well, it's not exactly an enclosure, but sometimes when I run around this part of the nature reserve early in the misty mornings, I see small groups of deer munching and stumbling and leaping about. And it's got some high fences, all of which smells deer to me. Now the nettles are thickening up. The deer are probably all smothered in Savlon and smoking fags in the undergrowth, and good for them. I've had lovely messages from people about the podcast and about the book this week, which is just really cheering, and so I wanted to thank you all for it. If you've ever worried about being a snivelling little bum-kissing creep, please let me assure you that being a snivelling little bum-kissing creep makes people like me very happy. Talking of creeping, my guest this week is a woman I actually started to like long before I ever met her. Rose Stokes is a journalist and events professional. She came to writing after working at The Economist for years in events and doing all sorts of technical writing before becoming a columnist. She did it. She crossed the fence, or at least is straddling the fence as we speak. I wanted to speak to Rose because I knew two very interesting things about her. She fell in love during lockdown, and she'll answer pretty much any question. So please do enjoy our chat all about bad breakups, holiday weddings, dating, and the baby question. Please also do be warned that in this chat, Rose and I talk in a little bit of detail about her experience of having an abortion. If that's something that for any reason you're not quite comfortable listening to at the moment, I really understand. But I'm also very grateful to Rose for talking about something that one in three women in the UK will experience at some point in their life. Also, after my chat with Rose, please do stick around because I'll be talking to relationship counsellor Simone Bowes, who gives us some much needed advice on healthy dating. How are you and how is your body?
I'm good, thank you, for a Monday morning. My body's good, except I've got a minor tooth problem. But other than that, I would say I'm feeling pretty good, pretty grounded.
There is something about pain in your head that I think is very hard to ignore. You can almost ignore any other pain, but pain in your face.
Oh, agree. And I had this sort of surgery done last Wednesday and they didn't really prepare me for the pain. And I woke up from my sedation and basically my boyfriend had to cradle me like a baby for the evening. Because my face was so, it was like throbbing like up into my forehead. Very painful. But other than that, like, I can't complain. Things are good.
Someone I know went in for minor surgery and went down, they were anaesthetized. They went down with Sean Paul playing on the radio. And so when they came to, their first question was, what happened to Sean Paul?
Oh, I have to say, I'm a huge fan of Sean Paul.
So. Yeah, but like a lovely back to consciousness, like, hello, Rose.
Yeah.
What happened to Sean Paul? So if I ever go into surgery, I'll be sure to ask about Shaggy when I go back. Or similar. I am very glad that you're here because you have met someone during the sort of most panicky of the panic years, i.e. the pandemic year.
But yeah,
before we get to that nice bit, I wanted to ask you, when for you do you think your panic years kicked in and what were you doing?
My panic years started with a diagnosis of a panic disorder.
Classic. I mean, the big boys.
I wasn't messing around. I remember when I was 26 and things were just sort of, you know, happening. And then 27, I remember, was when I first started thinking, gosh, maybe I need to start being a grown up. And my best friend got married. My nephew was born all in the same week. But then I sort of pushed it to the back for a while. 29 was when things really spun out for me. In terms of, I'd say I had three consecutive years. So 29, 30, 31,
big ones.
I left a really horrible relationship. I fell pregnant by mistake and decided to have an abortion, which didn't work. And then I got made redundant from my job and decided to change careers. So I pretty much, apart from my living situation, like everything just went into flux.
Absolutely maxed out the panic years. That's unreal.
I did.
I feel like I'm in the presence of a master. That's so the coming out of a relationship for me also was the sort of kickstarter of a huge period of upheaval and transition. What had your dating life sort of been like up until that point?
I think I stayed in that relationship for a lot longer than I would have had I not been worried about the panic years.
Wow.
There was so much very, very wrong with that relationship. It was very, very mentally abusive and it was getting really, really bad. But in my head, I was like, but babies, like you're 29.
Wow. Yeah.
And actually, it was a big subject in our relationship because whenever I said about leaving, he was like, oh, but you know, what if you can't have babies then? And then, you know, in my head, I always thought that by 30, it would all be wrapped up, right? I thought that I'd be on the same trajectory as my mum, who had 3 children and was done by 33. Like, I'm 33 now, I haven't even started. It was definitely on my mind. And to be honest, like, there was just one moment. It was like one morning when things had got unreasonably bad and I just woke up and my brain had somehow shifted from if to when. And I was just like, right, I'm doing it. And I ended up like walking out of my flat at like 7 in the morning with wet hair, just sort of like leaving it all behind. And that was the beginning of the panic years.
Wow.
Or like, no, I suppose it wasn't really, but I think it was... You know, you can be in a bad relationship when you're younger and you sort of can put it behind you. But I think in my head, there was this very persistent thought of, is this the world that I want to bring a child into? No. If not, then I probably need to start getting moving because next year's 30. And it was a catalyst for me to think, okay, well, this isn't what I want.
I completely agree that there's a sort of weather vane that you have in your bodies that in terms of relationships, your body basically will tell you whether it's working or not, sometimes through the medium of fertility. It's like you basically think about, could I have a baby with this person? Even if you don't want to have children or even if you can't have children, I think there must be a part of you that's like, you project your sort of most vulnerable childlike self onto that relationship and say, no, this is not working.
I was also getting some really, really strange pains in my ovaries at the time.
Really?
And that completely went away when the relationship went. And I'm sure I've got all these weird psychosomatic symptoms of anxiety and stuff. But in my head, I was like, they're saying, no, we don't want him.
That's fascinating.
We don't want him. Not this one.
I think a pregnancy scare or like going to a christening with a partner, there are all these moments where you can look in your relationship and think, this was maybe this was a great relationship for my 20s, or maybe this is a, you know, this is a relationship that's fulfilled a particular purpose, but this is not the relationship that I want to continue with into the next chapter of my life.
I think also my best friend was pregnant. So we were, you know, I mean, we're so close. And I thought, gosh, like kids changes a lot and it puts a lot of pressure on a relationship. If the relationship can't survive without kids at the moment, like it was just such a foreground relationship in the sense that it would never let me just get on with my life because it was always so troublesome that I couldn't put it to the background. And just now in my current relationship, I just sort of, it's a part of my life. It's a really nice part of my life. And I, you know, carry on with the rest of things. This other relationship was just constantly problematic, constantly breaking through every other important thing in my life. I was underperforming at work. And the funny thing is that I was having these panic attacks and they just stopped the day that I left. And I think to a certain degree, there was a sort of element of my head and my heart, like not to be too sort of cheesy about it, but that battle of like knowing I needed to leave, but ignoring something. And when I finally had some congruence in terms of my like inner world, I felt much less anxious outside of the relationship, even though I was, I think I was coming up for 30.
That is really interesting to me. Of course, my circumstances were really different, and I don't want to equate, like, leaving a relationship is very different according to the relationship and the people within it. Of course, for everyone, it's sort of unique and strange. But I do remember really clearly sitting at my desk, having weird tingling feeling in my hands and feet, and feeling this really deep sense of doom. I remember, like everyone, thinking, oh, maybe this is a heart problem, or maybe they, like, maybe this is, I've contracted some kind of terrible wasting disease that is slowly taking away my immune system. Having to ask a friend on GChat, which is what I did all day at work, and she said, this sounds quite a lot like a panic attack. Is there anything that you're sort of worried about? I think I knew that my relationship was coming to an end, and I didn't want it to, and I wasn't ready for it to happen, but my body knew that that was what was happening. And I haven't thought about that for years, but your description of having a panic attack in the office, it's so resonant to me that when you know, or when you suspect that a relationship is going to end, either for good or ill or beyond your control or because it's a decision you've made, your body kind of gives you the notice, gives you the warning before you've even had the conversation out loud or even admitted it verbally to yourself and others.
And actually learning that has been really interesting for me, because I had had a year's worth of like psychiatric delving into what was going wrong with me. And it was a big sort of narrative in the relationship. Oh, you know, you're mentally ill. Like there's all this sort of problems. And I'm not like, you know, I still have therapy and I still, you know, it got worse before it got better, but I stopped having panic attacks for no reason. And for me, there definitely was this sort of a real confidence gained afterwards, because I think I used to, in relationships before, I struggled to feel secure. I always had this sort of idea of an ending.
Yes.
And it was like I was waiting for it.
Yes.
And that used to make me feel really stressed and anxious. And I think seeing just quite how clear my body was like shouting at me to get out, I realized that actually I don't need to worry about things ending.
Mm.
My mind was like, oh, but what if this thing ends and I don't know it's gone wrong? Or like, what if something surprises me? And it's all sort of this, my mind trying to stay on top of like every threat that might be coming, just to check that, uh-oh, is this the end and I need to be prepared for it? I thought, well, actually, that was such a clear indication that, and that was happening for a long time before I actually left, that now I just sort of think, well, I'll probably know just if I listen to myself and actually tap into that rather than just pushing it down and ignoring it, then I'll probably never go wrong.
I'm so glad for you that you have done that, but it is hard work. That is really hard work to get to that point.
I was so lucky actually, because I had in my job, I had been given I had health insurance. So I got introduced to a therapist and we had gone there and basically I'd done the sort of 6 or 8 weeks of CBT. I had really good chemistry with her, but we didn't really achieve loads because I wasn't being honest about what was actually happening.
Right.
And because I was so desperate for this relationship to stay together, I didn't tell my friends, I wasn't honest with anyone about all this awful stuff that was happening. So then when I broke up with him, I sent a long letter to my therapist just saying, this is what actually happened. And she said, okay, do you want to come back and like start from a position of honesty? And so I self-funded, and honestly, I've been paying way above like my means for therapy for a few years, but I've just prioritized over anything else.
Yeah.
Because it worked for me. Honestly, like I'm just a totally different person. Like I can't even, everything in my life is so much better. Having that realization made me realize that I wasn't doing a job that I loved, and that there were friendships in my life that weren't really as balanced as I'd like them to be. And it made me do a big overhaul. I'm very lucky that I have my best friend, and she's now training as a counsellor, and I think probably not in not in small part because she spent
amateur
3 years
counseling.
And I was like, you're good at this.
Did you have a kind of last roll of the dice feeling then about coming out of a relationship at 30? Were you 30 when you get... Like,
No, 29.
How did you actually... like the idea of dating again at 29, what was that like?
Well, I was so mentally unwell that I actually took dating off the table for a year.
Right.
I still felt a huge amount of responsibility for everything going wrong.
Okay.
And I thought, well, there's no point in introducing someone else into this until I've sorted myself out. Because there was so much logistical stuff to sort out after I left this relationship, because my partner had moved in with me. Right. It was for the first time ever I was in a WhatsApp group with my mum and my dad.
Whoa, we don't have that. I don't have that with my parents.
Well, actually, my parents are like, you know, they get on quite well. And I remember saying, oh gosh, what if I now can't have children? And my mum said, my mum's so direct. She was like, cut the crap, Rose. She was like, it feels rubbish now. Tomorrow it'll feel a little bit less rubbish. And you're on, she was like, you're on an upward trajectory. Like, just follow it and you'll get what you want. Mm. I think for me, actually, the harder point almost was, I think I committed then to, I was like, you know, like there's been some stuff that's been following me around for a long time. Like, if I can deal with that, then I actually have my best shot of being in a happy relationship. And so I did try and be really patient with myself and just think, okay. And then I accidentally got pregnant.
Just to fully inhabit the role of a nurse at a gum clinic, was this a one-night stand or is this a long-term relationship? To which everyone who has ever gone to a sexual health clinic goes, somewhere in between, obviously.
It was someone I'd known for years, but it had only ever been a sex thing.
Right.
When either of us were single.
Mm-hmm.
We're not even friends. Like, we're not in any each other's circles or anything like that. So it was quite unfortunate. Also because we were just on a completely different wavelength about it. He just kept, like, he was a lot older and he didn't get why I was so horrified. He was just like, oh, we'd have cute babies. And I was like, no. The worst thing about that was that I found out on my way to Italy for a wedding. So, and I was one of the only single people at the wedding.
Mamma mia.
So I turned
up. If I was newly pregnant and single at an Italian wedding, I think I'd just go and gently slide down the side of a pebble and never come out.
I think the worst thing was because I had been really stressed at work. I decided that if I was going to fly to Italy, I wanted to stay for a bit, but I was on my own and it was kind of in the middle of nowhere. So the night before I was in the office until 9, as always happens when you are going on holiday the next day. And I was about to cycle home and my best friend, I was like, yeah, it's really weird. My period. Oh, cause I'd taken the morning after pill.
Right.
And she was like, take a pregnancy test because it will calm your mind for your holiday and then you'll be able to have a really good time. So I did it on FaceTime to her.
Wow.
And like, while her baby son was like, I think breastfeeding. It was just like,
marvelous.
And I didn't know anything about pregnancy. So I was like, well, it's got like two lines on it. What does that mean? And I like showed it up to the camera. She was like, oh, she's like, oh, it's, yeah, that's, that one's pregnant. I was like, no, that must be that's a mistake. She's like, yeah, babe, no, they don't really have mistakes when it's a positive, like that's not really, doesn't happen.
My God.
I think she was very worried that I was like flying off into like the middle of nowhere. And nobody, and obviously I didn't want to tell people that I was pregnant because you didn't want to like steal the thunder of the wedding. So I told two people just in case at any point because I was getting quite sick and stuff, just needed to have a couple of allies.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was quite a weird week.
And then how long after that, I presume you came back from Italy, you come back with any resolve or were you still in a state of flux then?
I was fairly sure what I was going to do. And then I came back on a Saturday morning and it was our friend's 30th birthday. So my best friend had come down for it and she said, I will stay for a couple of days because obviously like support you, her and her husband. And we went to this party and and one of the couples at our table announced a pregnancy. And I was like, it was very bad timing. And then I just got up, you know, when some of your eyes cross, my best friend's eyes crossed with mine. I stood up and walked straight to the toilet and just like crumpled on the floor in tears. And she barged her way into the cubicle. And I just remember this really, like, I was like proper crying. And then she said to me, she was like, oh yeah, you know, we're going to be here for you. And she said, oh, yeah, because obviously, you know, I'm trying too. And I was like, oh, I forgot that you were trying to have a baby. And it was just this sort of realization. But then the next morning, her and her husband like took me to the side and they said, oh, you know, if this is going to be difficult for you, like we'll stop trying for a while. Like, we know there's no urgency. We don't want to put you in a position of pain, because I was booking my appointment. It was all just very traumatic. Obviously, I was like, absolutely not.
That is such an act of love.
Oh, I mean, honestly, I get upset thinking about it. Then I booked in, and the first one didn't quite work. So it ended up taking quite a while. I had to have surgery in the end.
I'm sorry.
And my first day back to work, my best friend called me. And she texted me and she was like, oh, can I call you on my lunch break? And I was like, right. I was like, that's what's going on. And then she was like, I said, I think my caveat to her when I said, don't you dare put your life on hold for this was, and you're not allowed to hide anything from me. Like, don't you dare. So she rang me up and she was like, my period's late. So essentially then, yeah. So her child was born, I think, 3 weeks after my due date, which could have been really, really hard. But it was actually really great to have something really positive to focus on then. Mm. And there was a baby at the end of it, right, that I love and adore and was just on video call to this morning before I spoke to you. She's such a huge part of my life and I adore her. So it kind of felt like, not this one, but this other one that's come along. And
did you tell the man that had got you pregnant? Like, was he involved at all in that decision to have an abortion? And
I did tell him. I thought that telling him was the right thing to do. My mum, a few people disagreed, or sort of, you know, it was like, you know, you don't have to. I think the thing is, I didn't take it lightly. I even got a tattoo done after my abortion to sort of remind, because I didn't want, and everyone has a different relationship. For me, this was like a baby it wasn't even a baby, it was a little peanut or whatever.
I think at that stage, to speak medically, it would have been a lentil.
Oh, yeah, a lentil.
It's always
probably
a lentil.
Yeah. It's always a lentil. But I wanted to react seriously to it and not just be flippant about it, because I think I have had a tendency to be a bit flippant in the past. And I sat and thought about it and thought, okay, not this one, but the next one I'm going to be ready for. And that was a real sort of moment for me. And I got this arrow tattooed on my arm because my friend was like, this is your arrow moment. And I was like, I don't know what that means. She was like, when you're going to shoot an arrow, you have to pull it backwards before it launches.
Oh.
So she was like, it's that sort of backward movement right before you launch. So I have this arrow on my arm, which was done the day after. But yeah, I mean, for me, I think when you're 30 and you've always wanted children, like, it didn't feel like something I could just say. And also, you know, all these things go through your head. Like, you know, what if this is my only shot? I didn't have a boyfriend at the time. There was no prospects. I still had this very deep belief that love and relationships weren't for me, that I wasn't capable of them. So I was like, what if this is my shot? But also, you know, just those things like, what if when I do get round to it, I can't? And then I know that I've done this, and you sort of torture yourself with the idea. But I think in the end, like, I think a lot of the abortion narrative you read about, often people say, oh, it's selfish. And actually, it's the most selfless decision I've ever made.
Completely.
Because if it were down to me, I'd have had it.
Yeah.
I was, you know, I wanted it. I felt all of that rush of emotion, all of that, like, you know, everything that everyone feels. But I thought, you know, I think you deserve a better start than this. I'm not really where I need to be mentally, financially, you know, in my life. I'm not happy. Like, I don't think I can give you that. I think it's, you know, better not to bring a child into such uncertainty. I felt like if you were going to have a child, you should be able to say, like, this is 100% what I want right now. And it just wasn't, and I thought that's not fair, so.
I don't want to go into it more than you're comfortable, but I am struck by this, your body, how was your relationship with your body after it had, the morning after pill hadn't worked, and then the abortion pill hadn't worked?
Yeah,
did you
I know.
Just think you were?
My mum thought I was pregnant with the Messiah.
But I don't know how I'd feel about my mum thought she was giving birth to the Messiah. She like spun out on gas and air when she was in labour.
She was like, this pregnancy, like, because I'd had the morning after pill, and then, I mean, I felt like I was on my knees by the end of it. I was like, oh, I just want this thing to be over. And then when it was over, I was more sad because I think it was sort of, I don't know. I think even though I felt a bigger loss after it was over, but it was actually a really nice time for me and my mum, because she came up to stay in London for the duration and we bonded a lot.
And so then, my God, you had come out of a traumatic relationship, and then you'd gone through a fairly traumatic pregnancy abortion sort of situation, and then you were dating after that. Like, how did that, what were you looking for in relationships? What was your dating persona? Did you have a profile? What did it say?
Oh, I was terrible at it. I mean, you'll probably have guessed by this point on the podcast that I talk quite...
very closed up.
Yeah, private. I'm quite an open book, so I guess I would just tell people stuff. And I mean, there was actually one guy that I dated quite regularly who was just a sweetheart. He just wasn't ready. Like, I mean, probably if you were my therapist, you might look at this and say that I was sort of sabotaging relationships by sort of pushing people away and saying, oh, I'm damaged goods. Like, I've been through all this stuff. It's that horrible thing. I think I had a single friend. We used to talk about how, you know, people always say to you, oh, it's when you stop wanting it, it's when you stop looking, all that stuff. Such a rubbish thing to say to a single person.
Well, it's impossible advice to act on, actually.
It really is. And I don't think I never managed to switch off that thing in my head that was like every single man you meet, or every single, you're like, maybe this is the person, or could that be a person? Or like, you're constantly scanning because it feels like a problem that needs to be fixed. And because of the time pressure, and you sort of have this monthly reminder that, you know, the clock is ticking. I think the thing that was really interesting, and I think this would be, I'm fairly novel in this, is that the reason I think I found love in lockdown is because I'm not very good at the way that normal people date. Like, people are very sort of transactional on internet dating, the way that you're not supposed to, you know, tell people that you like them and all of the mysterious stuff. Like, I've never been good at that. I don't operate like that. So for me, the lockdown forced this amazing transparency. First of all, because I was living alone at home, I kind of had got to the stage where before the pandemic, I would find it really difficult to go and meet people because I had such a full and lovely life that I thought, oh, what if I meet this person and it ends up being a rubbish night? And then I've lost an evening where I could have gone to the gym, or I could have seen a friend that would have actually made me happier, when, you know, when your resources are finite.
I love this about, I think, dating in slightly older, you know, and by which I mean the difference between dating in your 20s and then beyond, is that beyond, you already have, hopefully, quite a full picture of who you are and what you're doing, and maybe quite a full life. Whereas in my 20s, I could be defined by my relationship much more easily. That's harder to do in your 30s. So the idea, like, I don't want to waste 4 hours in Oaxaca with someone who's boring when I could be doing X, Y, and Z.
Exactly. The first lockdown was a bit scary, obviously, for everyone, especially on my own. And I think actually everyone else around me was more worried about me than I was about myself, because I'd been single, living alone for a long time. I'd been through a big work change of work as well. That's the other big change I had. Like, I'd been through a lot the previous few years. So by the time this came around, I was like, oh, right, yep, chaos. Chaos world friend.
Pull a picture, chaos. Great.
Yeah. And I just got on with, like, I repainted my flat and just lots of projects and stuff. So the thing is that I love getting to know people. That's what I buzz off most in the world. And if dating was without this whole pressure to sort of work out, like, I would really enjoy it, but it doesn't quite work like that at the moment. And I thought, oh, well, maybe because we can't meet up and we're all stuck at home, I could actually have some meaningful conversations with people. So I downloaded Hinge. The other thing that was really interesting for me about dating in lockdown was it was almost like dating in a laboratory. After years of therapy where we'd gone over and over, okay, these are the mistakes I'm making. There was no noise and distraction. I started chatting to a guy who was pretty typical in terms of the, like, people that I'd dated before, and ended up being horrible, ignoring me, disappearing, like the usual. And I just was able to see it and think, this is where I would make the mistake, and maybe I won't make it this time. And then I met I saw matched with Simon, who was exactly the opposite of anything I would ever match with ever.
Remarkable, yeah.
And I thought, well, maybe I'll give this a go. And the funny thing is that we met on Hinge, but he actually went to school with one of my best friends, which we'd never met each other. And when I said to my friend Steve, you know, what's he like? Because when I, like, this sort of all came up, he said, oh yeah, he's really great. He's exactly the kind of person I wish you would date, but you won't because he's nice. Almost at the beginning, I was like, well, I'm going to prove you wrong, Steve, actually. We did a Zoom date.
Yeah.
And then a week later, we met up in Hyde Park and sat a meter apart on a bench.
Like spies.
Yeah, we didn't touch for 5 weeks.
God, it's the stuff of Bollywood movies. This is so romantic.
I know. I remember his knuckles, like he dusted my knuckles at one point. And also I hadn't touched anyone for like 100 days. And I was like,
convulsion.
Yeah, honestly. And then after 5 weeks, that was when Boris announced the support bubble thing.
Okay.
So we'd spent like 5 weeks going for walks and stuff. And then so after 5 weeks without kissing each other or touching each other or knowing what each other's like intimately, we then had to have a conversation. It was so great for me. We sort of had to say, right, I'm going to forsake all others because, like, to have a support bubble, you can't have any. Like, I was like, I actually wrote a piece of my, did one of my Metro columns that was like, how to decide between having sex or seeing your mum.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That was pretty much the decision I had to make. Luckily, my mum was like, go for it, babe.
Your mum sounds amazing.
She's so great. So we had to have this conversation. He'd been, because I don't date, like I can't date multiple people at the same time. I've never been able to do that. He was like sort of chatting to other people. We had to have this conversation where I just had to lay my cards down on the table very early on. I was like, yeah, I really like you. Well, I was like, I can't really join a bubble with you if you're going to go and see other people. And we just had to kind of get it out of the way, you know, in a way that I think in dating in normal time, it's so difficult to be clear about what you want.
Yes.
And it was excruciating. It was the first time I'd ever put down a boundary. And he just like sort of left it. He was like, I'll have 12 hours to think. And then I was like, okay. So I turned my phone off and was very much like, okay, let's be zen about this. And anyway, I slept for like 12 hours, woke up the next day, turned my phone back on. And it turns out he'd text me like 10 minutes later. Saying, no, I really do want this. And then I just hadn't got back for like 12 hours. I was like, oh, I'm really sorry. I'd been all like, my way or the highway, and then just made him like wait for my response. Everyone around me has just been like, gosh, like I've never seen you so confident, peaceful. Like my best friend even says, like, I think that it's unlocked a new level of you that I don't think I've even ever known, because you're so comfortable in yourself in a way that you just weren't. Like,
that's amazing.
Like, I mean, it's been a weird year. We've had quite an exciting, like, you know, all the sort of honeymoon period has kept us both quite buoyant. Like, we've also, it's been strange in a lot of ways. Like, we haven't met all of each other's families, or because half of his family live in the US, or we haven't, we've never been on a dance floor
together.
Oh
my God, he might be a terrible dancer.
I know. But the thing is, I was saying this weekend, because we met one of his friends, like one really nice thing about it is I think Rose of yesteryear, introducing him to my friends and family would have been a really nerve-wracking experience, because I was quite porous in terms of the way that, yes, of other people's opinions.
Good word for it.
Yeah. And this time I was like, well, in 3 weeks' time is our 1 year anniversary. Like, he's just meeting some of my friends for the first time. But like, I'm like, well, yeah, we're together. Like, I don't have any doubt. Mm. I know I'm very confident about we're moving in together. And I feel like it's helped me to really just be like, yeah, this is what I want. Ignore everyone else and other people's opinions. And it's just been, honestly, it's just been so easy as well. You know, every relationship I've been in before has always just been this like anxiety the whole time.
Yes.
I've got none of it. Like, I'm just like, oh no, yeah, this is the thing. Like,
I remember my sister saying to me, when it's good, it's very simple.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, but I'm not a simple person. My life is not simple. I'm not emotionally simple. It will never be simple for me. And she was bang on. Like, when I met my partner, it was very simple. Mm. And it's remained fairly simple since. Like, we obviously go through very complicated, complex decisions or events. But the way I feel about him and the way he feels about me is quite simple.
Yeah.
And on a sort of emotional heart, like sort of pulse level, it's fairly easy and good and simple.
Right. I think, like, in the third week, he said something so insightful about me. I was like, wait, but I'm like a really complex, unknowable person.
What do you think, if you had to really boil it down, what made the difference between the dating that you did before and this relationship? What's actually worked?
I think it was believing that I deserved better and believing that I deserved good things. And I think that for me, like, there were so many things, like, as I say, like, it was a very chaotic few years, and it often felt very much like things were out of control, but there was one thing that I could control, and that was how I felt about myself. And I think, honestly, like, working on your own self-esteem brings good things in every area of your life. I think being able to be happy and in a relationship for me meant just being able to be happy and actually working on getting myself happy and understanding why it had been so hard and, like, what the sort of key factors were in holding me back. And also trying to interact and interrogate that sort of need I had, and wondering, like, you know, and trying to work out where it was coming from, what was me versus what was programming, and what's, like, you know, and what, and trying to quieten out all of the noise and actually think, okay, what do I actually want? I think I was so clear about it when my partner, I was like, I remember the day that we were chatting on Hinge, and he said, oh, like, you know, I don't want to be intense, but I'd like to have children, and if you don't, then we probably shouldn't meet up. And I thought, oh my goodness, like, that clarity. And I think that the lockdown allowed me to think, well, I'm not going anywhere, I can't meet any of these people. Like, I was just really, really honest from the beginning about what I was looking for, and I think that that helped me. And believing, not only, and sort of being honest about what I wanted, and believing that I deserved it, like, they're the two sort of key things for me, and I think everyone, hopefully.
Hello, welcome back. Thank you to Rose for being such a funny and candid guest. I hope that whatever state of relationship you're in, whether that's single, attached, somewhere undefined between those two, you find that story of love as sweet as I do. As you probably picked up on, I often found dating rather a challenge. In fact, I frequently skipped dating and went straight into semi-naked camping with a near stranger, as those of you who have read the book will know. So I wanted to speak to a professional about how we can make dating easier, kinder, and more fulfilling. Simone Bowes is a relationships counsellor working at Relate and in private practice. Who better then to ask, why, when we're dating, do we feel like we have to hide our true selves in order to appear more attractive?
Generally, we see our flaws as unacceptable to another person, or at least not lovable. And I think that really depends on your general self-esteem to start with. And I think maybe sometimes also you can maybe start off quite confidently, but if you have, like, a, you know, history of, like, rejection or things not working out, then you can start to also develop a lack of self-esteem in yourself. So then you feel like, oh, I need to hide things about myself. But and there's a sort of a feeling of shame. But actually, I would say that, you know, in order to find the right person for you long term, you have to have that courage.
It's a lovely word.
You have to have the courage to show your these what you call flaws, which could actually be, like, you know, quirks and things that can also that make you unique.
There's also a kind of almost inbuilt deceit that, you know, I haven't dated for a while, but I certainly remember there are all these kind of games about not seeming too available, not agreeing to a date if it was too, like, if they asked you out that night, you had to pretend you were busy, to leave earlier than maybe you want to so you don't seem to involve, you know, all of that stuff, the kind of game playing.
The game. There was a book about this.
Oh my God. Like the most toxic book. Like, is that something that we kind of police in each other? Like, do we say to our friends, oh, don't seem too eager, don't seem too keen, don't seem too available? And would it be better to just take the risk and be honest with that person and show your enthusiasm?
I think this is the thing. You've got to really ask yourself, what are you doing this for? What are you dating for? Are you doing it out of boredom, or are you doing it out of like a little bit of titillation or excitement, or to see, you know, have I still got it, you know, who, you know, that type of thing? And just ask yourself the truth. If you're really trying to find, you know, somebody to, you know, have a serious relationship with, then I think honesty is the best policy. And playing mind games, you know, you shouldn't do it. I don't think that if you want the right person, playing hard to get is not the right thing to do. You might lose out on somebody who actually could be really right for you because you played a game.
We seem to have a real problem, and I mean like in the UK and probably in the US and other places too, with telling people that you like them. We don't like telling people that we like them, but some of us don't even like hearing that we're liked, you know. And I think what's going on there? Why is it such a taboo to say to someone, hey, I really like you, I think you're great?
I think it's just generally the fear of being rejected and putting yourself out there. I think it's scary to put yourself out there. Yeah. And I think also saying that you like somebody is another vulnerability, isn't it? And it's...
it's the biggest.
It's asking somebody, do you like me too? I'm saying, I'm putting myself out there and I'm asking you too. Because you're obviously expecting, you know, you're wondering what response is going to come back. So it's the fear of the response, perhaps. And I think people who basically, when they hear someone likes them and they don't feel comfortable with it, I think these are people that need to work on their loving themselves and their self-worth, because they're obviously in a place where they're not able to maybe receive love in a healthy way. And they may sabotage relationships because of that. They could be a little bit destructive sometimes because they don't feel like they are worthy of it. So, you know, when you're dating, I think you have to also work on loving yourself and spending a lot of time, you know, working on the things that make you feel good and make you feel worthy of being loved.
I also want to talk to you about this impossible phrase, or I found it impossible, which is to be yourself. Which, you know, I think... at my grand old age, I realise that's just another way of referring to self-worth, isn't it? To be yourself. You have to feel that yourself is good enough to be. What are our sort of tools to build up that sense of self-worth in order to be yourself? Or how do you go about being yourself in the first place?
Okay. I think, firstly, you should practice it with the people around you that you trust. But it's interesting, you might find that you're not even yourself with people around you. So it's a good place to start is actually being honest with your friend, like working on being honest and more transparent about yourself with people in your life that care about you, and getting their feedback and telling them your flaws, and seeing that, oh, actually, it's not the end of the world that I've said this out loud. Because I think the shame goes when you start to actually admit like things that, you know, your flaws or things about you, and you realise actually it's fine and no one's perfect. And actually, you know, people, as I said, like, you know, things that seem like flaws can actually seem quite charming to another person, or part of what your personality is. There's another side to the coin where actually it has a really nice element to it, you know. So you might be shy, but actually you're really good at being a really good listener, and you give time to people or something like that. So I think it's also really good to hear about what other people think of you, not necessarily what job you have or what hair color you have, but it's actually about you know, what are you really like, what's your little quirk, what are the little things about you? You can get so much more of a better idea of somebody, and in the end these things are going to come out anyway. You know, if you're dating somebody, you can pretend to hide it. And in all the rules, they're always saying, you know, hide that, because they just want you to nab a partner, and then, oh, it's already done then. But the truth is, if you want real intimacy and a real connection and you want to feel safe with somebody, it's better to show those things and not feel shame about them. Yeah. And that's through working through self-love, like, you know, maybe seeing a therapist, you know, talking to somebody about the things that you don't like about yourselves and working on accepting yourself more. So, yeah, and then being honest about it, because you're going to get a much better match by being like that. And you won't feel so fearful. You'll feel accepted. You'll feel like, oh, someone does love me for these traits. Someone will out there.
You're absolutely right. And I do think that, you know, if you want intimacy with someone, you can only have that if they are seeing who you truly are. Otherwise, it's a very long, exhausting performance that really eventually will crack. I'm sure you speak to lots of people who have been dating for years and years. How do we make that sort of culture less toxic or less hard or less harmful? You know, are there things like, do you ever give people guidance on how they can approach dating in a way that makes it sort of happier and healthier for everyone involved?
I think it's probably, okay, being honest on your profile. So it goes on that journey. You start with that journey. What do you really want from this? Do you want a partner? Be honest. Don't waste people's time.
Yeah.
If you are somebody who's feeling quite vulnerable, I think you have to work on that. If you do want a serious relationship, and be honest with that person that, you know, when you're getting to know each other, you know, just say, can you be patient with me? You know, I need a little bit of time because I do have slight issues with being, you know, always open and vulnerable. I have a little bit of a fear around that.
The big one is, how do we cope with rejection? It's the big fear that kind of agitates under all of this and makes, I think, complicates what could otherwise be quite a nice, nurturing or fun experience. It's the fear of rejection that makes ties us up in knots. How do you get better at that?
It's so hard, actually. I think this is the toughie, because I think when I'm working with clients, a lot of the time what we talk about is that fear of rejection or the experience of being rejected and that pain, you know, that sort of wound that it creates. And I would say, you know, a lot of the time it is about working on self-love, working on the positives. Also, the love that you put out there, because I think a lot of the time if you put out love and make the effort with your relationships, you will start to feel worthy of love yourself. So whether that's, you know, spending, you know, doing more for your friends without needing something in return, you know, doing something in the community, doing things that make you feel worthy of love, and also not spending too much of your time focusing just on trying to find a partner. So putting your focus into other areas where you feel, where you can build your self-esteem. I think it's also about self-acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also about having fun and enjoying your life, even when you haven't got a partner, and realising, you know, I'm okay. I really do want to meet somebody, but I'm okay too. I can have fun.
Yeah.
And actually, if you go and do, like, put yourself out there, go and do activities that are fun, where, you know, you might meet somebody. You might not, but at least you're having fun in the process of it.
Yeah, that it's not always the end goal for every activity all the time.
You're allowed to not have it absorb your entire life.
Because it can feel like a full-time job, can't it?
Yeah, I would say actually don't spend too much time on it, as in the day, like when you're doing the, like, scrolling online, like, don't spend too long on it. Like, give yourself a certain amount of time a day so it's not defining all your time. You know, spend, like, you know, half an hour on it and then leave it.
Very good advice.
Also, if you're having issues with rejection, just think about, remember the things that your friends have said to you as well about you. Like, remember all these good things. I think it's really important that you keep your self-worth and self-esteem up. I think that's the main thing, is you've got to keep reminding yourself and also growing.
Yeah.
And not feeling like you can only grow in a relationship.
Hello, you. I'm so glad you came back for the goodbye. I'm about to start walking back home in the rain to scrape glue off the sofa and wipe pen off my leg. Hopefully some of the smell of grass and blossom and wood smoke will linger when I get in. Thank you to Rose and to Simone for talking to me this week, and thank you for listening. Next week's guest is the very funny, very lovely actor and comedian Tiffany Stevenson. So please come back next Friday for that. If you've enjoyed this podcast
And actually, even if you haven't, please subscribe and leave me a glowing 5-star review so more people can find it. It makes a huge difference, feels great, and like mud on bare feet, will cost you absolutely nothing.
This is a brand new audio production.